Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Today, this is Talk Back. Talk Back is a program devoted to having you come on the air and share your comments, questions, challenges, or points of view. Our number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Today, the latest in health and healing, including something stress caused that few people thought about. Also, garlic oil is good for a really serious condition. And you take one cancer-causing agent, nothing happens. You take two, then you up your cancer risk. We'll talk about that. Chocolate reduces cardiovascular disease by a big amount and stroke. And vitamin B6 is protecting your DNA. I'll talk about that. Fatty acids found in fish is going to lower your risk of breast cancer, a new study on that. And six foods and herbs for arthritis and other inflammatory pain. A longer segment tonight on our environmental issue. A commentary from Lester Brown from The Observer. The real threat to our future is peak water. What this means is that as populations rise, overpumping means some nations have reached peak water, which threatens food supplies. I've just returned from a major trip of filming. It should be the last trip I have to take for about a year, for this because I filmed three separate documentaries at once. But one of them dealt with poverty in America. I'm finding so many farms and ranches are running out of water. You run out of water, you can't irrigate your fields. Can't irrigate your fields, you don't have grass. Don't have grass, you have nothing for cattle and horses to eat. So it's a big issue, virtually undiscussed by the mainstream media. Also, the latest count is that 71 ALEC, that's the American Legislative Exchange Council, that's about 300 of the biggest corporations in America, have bills for making it harder for we the people to make corporations accountable for causing injury and death. How do they get away with this? Why aren't we protesting to our state legislators, don't meet with ALEC? That's not who voted for you, we voted for you. And also, if time permits, from Joshua Holland from Alternet, this is a shocker. Only 1% of the so-called terrorists nabbed by the FBI were real. Well, then who are the 99 other percent? I'll get you that information today. So we have a lot to share, and I will be taking your calls throughout the program. Garlic oil eases chemo effects. This is a new study published in the Journal of Food Sciences and the Institute of Technologists. And it says, quote, garlic oil reduces the decrease of white blood cells caused by chemotherapy and radiation treatment in mice with cancerous tumors. The findings of this study support the idea that cancer patients may benefit from consuming garlic oil as a complementary medicine to their patients. Well, that's very good, because have you seen how much the side effect occurs from chemotherapy, from hair falling out to pain, nausea, wasting away, and other conditions? Well, garlic oil is easy to get, inexpensive, and it's good for you. We've been told for a long time that, well, something may cause cancer, but it's not easy to always determine that. What we can determine is something is carcinogenic. Now, what that means is that the chemicals in a particular substance, whatever it may be, are known to cause DNA defects, which can lead to cancer. That's different than proving, for example, that smoking cigarettes cause lung cancer. And they got away with this nonsense because they controlled the science and the policymaking for over 100 years. For example, when we were out there trying to get saccharin banned and cyclamates banned, they would say, oh, you'd have to drink 700 cans of soft drinks before you could get cancer. And they laughed about it. Well, now we know that a lot of people drink 700 cans of soft drink. But they also looked at their argument in isolation, without reason, without logic, without good science. Because who in the world just consumes soft drinks? No one. In an average day, we consume more than 150 different cancer-causing agents. So, needless to say, these work synergistically. Here's the latest story on this from Texas Tech University and also the Institute of Environmental and Health, Human Health, and published in the peer-reviewed journal The Prostate. Quote, low doses of arsenic and estrogen together, even at levels low enough to be considered safe for humans, if they were on their own, can cause cancer in prostate cells. And this is a new study. So, if you have two separate cancer-causing agents, they won't tell you not to use them because they say each one can't cause cancer by itself. This study is showing when you combine them, they do. While most chemicals we consume stay in our body for weeks, and therefore there's a long period of time for this gestation of multiple cancer-causing agents coming together. We know that stress kills people. There's no question about that. And we have looked at multinational studies. We can see how it causes heart disease, kidney failure, even nervous breakdown. But most people never relate stress to blindness. You should, because when you're stressed, more people have high blood pressure. This is better known as essential hypertension. And that can put you at a much higher risk of developing retinal vein occlusion, or RVO. Now, RVO is a disease that would affect about 4 out of 1,000 people. It's considered as a heart attack or stroke selectively affecting the retina and the most important and sensitive part of the eye. The condition can result in blurring of vision, and without treatment can progress to total loss of vision, and because you're bleeding in the eye. And that's what we're finding out. Now, how is stress linked to this condition, this retinal vein occlusion? Well, eyes are the most sensitive part of the body, and hypertension induced by stress can cause vision loss and blindness if left untreated. Now, high blood pressure doesn't only affect your heart, but it also disrupts the vessels that supply blood to the eyes, forming clots and damaging them. And profuse bleeding in the eyes and unattended high blood pressure could develop retinal vein occlusion. And retinal vein occlusion is very serious. Now, eye problems arising from hypertension are not emphasized enough in the society, and thus people aren't aware of the physical and emotional damage their eyes can incur. In order to overcome these challenges, you need to acknowledge these underlying effects of stress and they are living under and bring in some positive changes. It begins at home as well as in the workplace, and it's a continuous process of eating better, living better, rigorous exercise, and really good stress management. Meditation, journal writing, relaxing with your companion pet, going for a walk, being with someone that you care about, these can all reduce stress. And so we know that we should be doing more, but we're not. So just want to let you know that you can end up going blind from stress and high blood pressure. I remember once someone asking in one of the 47 workshops I've done in human studies, why do you take everyone off wheat and dairy and sugar, caffeine? And I went through each one of these at that time and explained, not only to this person, but the other people, why. Well, now there's a new article in a very prestigious PLOS journal, and it talks about the what's called wheat belly, wherein you end up with wheat being a major contributing factor to obesity and diabetes. And that's why a gluten-free way of consuming grains is better. In a new study, researchers at Bartholin Institute in Copenhagen, Denmark, looked at what is called gliadin, and that's a difficult-to-digest class of proteins within wheat, and they're the ones that promote weight gain and insulin secretion in both animals and cell models. And so by having this gliadin, it does not break down easily in the body. And that causes extremely hyperphobic, which is water fearing, and contain disulfide bonds, the same kind of found in human hair and vulcanized rubber. And as a result, undigested wheat gliadin fragments can enter through the intestinal wall, gaining systemic access to the body. And this can result in inflammation and autoimmune conditions. And that is frequently what we see. There's more than 200 negative results associated with eating wheat. And these gliadin fragments have been found in mother's milk, indicating they are capable of traveling freely throughout the body and can therefore affect the health of newborns. So mothers should also be on a gluten-free diet and then watch your digestion improve and watch your weight come off. Now, one very nutritious element in our diet is chocolate. From the British Medical Journal, quote, "Research has found that chocolate improves 39% lowering the risk of cardiovascular disease and 29% reduction in the risk of stroke." So that's good news. And this was a long-term study, 114,000 patients in this study. I suggest that it be a dark chocolate without all the added dairy and sugar and trans fats. There's just no rhyme nor reason to how the Japanese people are processing the information, the majority of them, on Fukushima. It's almost as there's a fear of knowing becomes a fear of doing, according to Fritz Perl, the father of Gestalt. So as long as we don't ask too many questions and we don't ask the right questions, then we're not going to get an answer that could scare us. But let me just set up the scenario. Let's say that you live 11 miles from Indian Point, which is approximately 38 miles north of Manhattan. There's two nuclear power plants there. And they're old, and they're decrepit, and there's always problems. But you live 11 miles, and you've been told that there's a 10-mile safety zone. But let's say there's an accident. Would you feel comfortable that you're a mile outside the danger zone? By what law of physics is there that radiation stops from blowing in a certain direction because it was mandated politically? The reason there is a 10-mile safety zone is because there's no way to vacate Long Island, Manhattan, and the boroughs. It would not be humanly possible if Indian Point exploded. There would be no way of getting out. As a result, millions of individuals in this area would get very serious levels, possibly even lethal levels of radiation, if there was a Fukushima-style meltdown. So now we go back over to Japan, and here we have Fukushima, and we have people still living close enough to Fukushima, and one farmer, you look at his cows, and the cows have growths, cancers, their hair's falling out, and yet he won't leave. And you have other people who are resistant. But then not far away, and I'm not talking about far at all, is Tokyo, the most densely populated city on the planet, 40 million people at least. And then when you look at the actual radiation that is measured over 1,200 hotspots, they found hotspots in children's playgrounds, on roofs of skyscrapers. And for a simple reason, because when the wind is blowing and you have absolutely no protection, all that radiation is going in your direction. So the people who are trying to manage this and have been lying to the public about the dangers, they would like dig out dirt for a foot around a place. Then they would put a Geiger counter there and say, see, it's very little. Well, if the camera pulled back, you'd see that this was a man-made place that had been cleaned so that it would get a false reading. Then they'd put metal, lead, around some of the Geiger counters, so that when it was registering, they get a close-up, and it wouldn't show a high reading. But then take away the metal, and suddenly it goes off the chart. Now, these people should be held accountable for crimes against humanity. because there are going to be millions of Japanese who are going to end up with cancers, leukemias, birth defects, stillbirths, and long-term immunological defects because of the constant exposure from Fukushima. But there's a problem, and here's the problem. How do you tell a country that had been, until about 3 years ago, the second largest economy in the world, that because of the continuing contamination of Fukushima, the entire country is getting very high levels of radiation, and then what are you going to do with your manufacturing plants? What are you going to do with the people who work there? What are you going to do with the value of real estate? How would you get rid of a population? Where would you put these people? There's no place for them to go, and no methods to get a mass evacuation. So the only thing they could do is try to downplay the significance and lie about it. Well, just last week we found out that radiation had escaped and was going freely into the ocean. Now here's, they weren't even smart enough to get the lie right. They finally had to acknowledge that radiation was in the ocean. Okay, here's another simple question. What law of physics prevents currents from taking that radiation as it's spilling in massive amounts into the ocean and carrying it eastward towards the United States? Well, there's nothing to prevent that, and that's what it's been doing. Well, then what about all the fish, the tuna and other fish? Well, it's going to be contaminated. What about all the sea vegetation? That is because Japan is one of the largest exporters of seaweed in the world. So rather than adversely affect the economy and people's living, they simply lied about it. But then there's another part of this, and here's what it is. We got all the maps, and we started looking at the topography, and we found that right under Fukushima, there is also down below the sea level bed, there's also an aquifer that feeds a lot of the country where they grow their rice. Now, we know for a fact that once you pollute with radiation an aquifer, it can never be unpolluted. And so why didn't they tell the people the truth? Well, once again, then who's going to buy the rice? Who's going to grow the rice? What are you going to do with all that rice? And what are you going to do with one of the largest aquifers in Japan? Because radiation can't be stopped. Once it melted through the core, and once it melted through the floor, there's nothing under there, just rock, sand. It'll burn right through that, and it'll just keep going till it meets something that dissipates it or carries it, and that'd be water. So the truth is that if they were to stop all the pollution tomorrow, it would take them decades to clean this mess up. But they haven't got it stopped, and it's not going to be stopped for a long time. Another year from now, Japan will have one of the highest risks of future cancers in the world. And if it continues more than 24 months, then they'll probably have to make treaty arrangements with either China or with Russia to move manufacturing and to build industrial cities where they can continue doing manufacturing and have people live, because you'll have at least 50% of all Japan will no longer be habitable. Just listen to the reports from the Russians about Chernobyl. They lied, as official policy, downplayed its significance, and as a result, 1 million Russians ended up dying, mainly in the Ukraine, around Kiev, because they weren't told to evacuate, they weren't told not to buy produce in that area, because the Russian government lies about everything. But so does the Japanese government. Well, in fact, all governments lie. That's just the way it is. Here's the latest. And of course, you have not heard this in the major media, but we'll share it with you. From the Journal of Ethnopharmacology, the Egyptian Journal of Immunology and Phytotherapy Research, as references. Quote, from Natural News, new images have surfaced depicting what appears to be some of the more radioactive consequences of the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear disaster. A slideshow recently posted on MSN.com reveals deformed tomatoes with bulbous growth defects cucumbers with unsightly leaves growing out of their flesh, disturbingly misshapen eggplants, peaches with elephantitis-like outgrowths, unnaturally massive heads of cabbage, and Siamese corn that splits off into two cobs, all the consequences of Fukushima's ongoing nuclear fallout. The pictures were collected by a Korean news agency and from people in the proximity of Fukushima. All sorts of fruits, vegetables, and other plants are portrayed in the photo album as bearing potentially radioactive-induced growth defects, which has stirred concerns about the safety of Japanese produce. Now, quote, among the mutant vegetables is a gigantic tomato apparently bubbling with tumors, a five-fingered turnip, two peaches which had grown into figures of eight, and the UK's Daily Mail talked about this, quote, two gardeners hold cabbages aloft, one a normal size, the other at least four times bigger. And in one picture, a cucumber seems to have formed into a strange hybrid with leaves erupting from the base. Well, so what we have then is we have adverse effects, but what about lower level effects? They could also put high levels of cesium-134 and 137 and strontium-90 and other nuclear isotopes into the water, into the soil, into the air. There's only two things you can do. You either raise the tolerance level by which you say it's safe to be in an area. So if everyone's getting, let's say, 100 points of radiation, then you make the safe level 200. And if it reaches 200, you make it 400. Now, mind you, you can have people dying from the radiation they're receiving, but you'll keep saying that it's still okay. Or you simply cover it up and say, never happened. Well, it's happening. So just remember that in anything you're getting from Japan, there can be serious consequences. And finally, vitamin B6 is linked to DNA protection. So this is a good thing, and this is from the National Center for Global Health and Medicine. And it says, quote, data from 500 men and women revealed that increasing vitamin B6 levels were associated with lower levels of 8-hydroxy-2 G, a marker for oxidative stress. So that's good. And that means you can lower your homocysteine and oxidative stress. And homocysteine is just a really dangerous hormone, an inflammatory marker. And when it's elevated, you risk dying. So you don't want a high homocysteine level. You want to get it down like 5 or 6, ideally. And B6 can help you get there. 300, 400 milligrams can do that. Also, there's a new study published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, done at the University of Kansas, that shows that the brain benefits from increasing the amount of DHA at birth, and it'll take several years to emerge, but your child will have healthier brain function because of this, from the omega-3 fatty acids. So that's good. I'm Gary Nall. This is Talk Back. Going to take a short break and come back with your questions. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. Let's go to our microphone and telephone and say hello to Mickey from Dayton, Ohio. Hi, Mickey. Your turn.
Hi, Gary. You've spoken many times about the student debt and interest issue. looks like Congress has done the best they can do about it here. It's not too impressive. And I have two sort of off-the-reservation ideas that could be done. One of them is similar to the Canadians when they gave the draft resistors asylum. Different Caribbean, Central, and South American countries or Southeast Asian countries could give student debt asylum, allow highly qualified bachelor's, master's degree, and even PhD folks to come there and put in new roots because they need their skills. Since apparently we can't get jobs for all the people here. And my second concept is, you know, if you can't pay for your car, you give it back to the bank or it gets repossessed. And then this will make the real, you know, the Chicago boys real happy because it will require a loss of value and some litigation. And give the students an option to give back their degrees, give back the credit for their classes, and to discharge it through normal bankruptcy court.
Let's take a look at those. First, we have an issue that has not been addressed by the mainstream media at all, and that is a special form of visa that allows highly qualified individuals to come to the United States and to work for corporations taking over upper management and technical skilled people's jobs. So let's say that you worked for a company for 20 years, you were making $150,000, $200,000 a year, and you had seniority. These people would come in, and possibly they had equal background. They're from India, South Korea, Formosa, and they're going to work for $50,000. But more importantly, they're working under this visa, so they don't have the same, they don't have to pay Social Security. They're going to be saving the person a lot of company, a lot of money. Now, there's law firms that are recruiting these people into the hundreds of thousands per year. So we only talk about the illegal aliens coming across the borders. I'm talking about the legal, highly qualified, and for all I know, very decent people. I don't have a thing against them because they're looking for a way of paying back their debt and working for their families. But we have been, in effect, we have been dealt a terrible blow because we're not aware of this. The one protection most American workers feel that they have is if I work long enough, hard enough, if I progress to a place where I'm essential to the company, then I have some security. Now, that's not true. Now, add on to that the other side of it, that there are reasons why the U.S. economy is not moving, and it's simple. Now, the gross domestic product figures, which are not accurate because at least 17% of our gross domestic product comes from the financial services industry, and that makes money only off money. It does not build new factories. It does not support small businesses. It doesn't help anyone but themselves. So take out 17% of 1.8% growth in the first quarter of this year, and you're down somewhere around 1.2 to 1.3%. Now, that's really recession levels. But it doesn't also look at what's happening to the vast majority of American workers and workers who are consumers. They can't pass a dollar around enough. There was a time when a dollar, when it started off, exchanged hands about 67 times. So let's say if you made enough money, you wanted to take your family out to a meal that passes to the restaurant and to the waiter or waitress. You wanted to go to a movie theater. You drop clothes off at the dry cleaners. You got a car wash. Think of all the ways that, you know, we go to a baseball game. We go to a concert. Now, when people don't have enough money for their basics, for health care, education, food, mortgage, just the basics, then they don't have that money to spend within their economies, and hence the overall economy shrinks because the average worker doesn't have the disposable income that they once did. But that's good for the corporations because as wages fall, then they can hire even cheaper labor. So therefore, when you see the idiots on all the networks, because they're all idiots in my opinion, they're saying, oh, good report today. Unemployment's down to 7. What do you mean unemployment's down to 7.2%? By what standard? Every single person that stops looking for a job is no longer considered a part of the employment picture at all. And anyone who was working for a living wage, let's say $20 an hour, $30 an hour, is now working for $12 an hour. Just give you an example. A hair stylist, cosmetologist earned $12 an hour. All right? Working in a restaurant, and by the way, that's now down to $10.91 an hour. That's a 9% drop. Restaurant cooks lost 7% in the same period. So people now who have work frequently only work part-time and at a lower income, but they're considered fully employed on the statistics. They're not. That means the entire middle class in the United States is going down in its medium income. In fact, the average American income is $50,054. That's for the most recent full year. That's 8.1% down in 2 years. And that is serious, meaning the average American has higher bills, higher interest on those bills, no relief on mortgages, mortgage debt, mortgage interest, school debt, school interest, and yet will have to, the value of what they have goes down. Their assets go down, and their income goes down, and that's a perfect formula for inflation. And the jobs are not real jobs. 300% increase in lower wage occupations. That means we're getting rid of higher wage occupations. And for example, the federal government cut 835,000 jobs over the past 4 years, and many of them middle income positions. So as a result, the jobs you do see are frequently federal minimum wage jobs, $7.25 an hour, in the adjusted inflation value of which has declined by more than 30% since the 1960s. So that's what's happening, because labor is being hammered by capital. So the people who have capital are the people behind ALEC, the American Legislative Council. They bought the legislation, they bought the House, they bought the Senate, they bought the White House a long time ago, and they bought the judiciary. So then who's on their side? No one. Unions aren't organizing. There are no general strikes. The students are not organized. They didn't even support the Occupy movement. There's an irony, isn't it? Do you see the irony in it, that the 100th of 1% of the students that did protest were not supported by the 99.9% of the students who continued to live at the behest and through the 1% of the corporatized America? So this idea that there's 1% that's bad and 99% good, no, I would say you got 99% who've disconnected themselves from any meaningful could take on their own life. So that's the larger picture we have to put all this into. So then understand, the government makes 34 cents out of every dollar of student loan. Wouldn't it make sense then to bring pressure upon your legislators in these midterms to get the government out of making any profit? The government shouldn't make a penny profit off student loans. That would save 34% right off the bat. Then they just took it from supposedly 6.4% down to 5.4%, but it compounds and you can't get out of it. So you should have zero interest. If you're going to give $21 trillion in zero interest to the big corrupt banks, all of them are just total criminals, and you can't find it to give a break to the students, you're charging 500% above what you charge a bank, and the bank to cause the problems, students haven't caused the problems. Students are innocent. So that shows that we, the people, are the 1% enablers. We're the problem. I don't blame some of the people who are in power because they're sociopathic. And we all know that. The moment people have power in our society, it corrupts them completely, including union heads. They then turn around and don't challenge the NAFTA, don't challenge GATT, don't challenge CAFTA, don't challenge Trans-Pacific Partnership, don't challenge products made outside the USA. And they should have had general strikes a long time ago.
Yeah, well, Gary, all the more reason these students need to realize their country doesn't love them or care for them.
No, but then understand something. They can go to another country, but our government is so corrupt, it's not going to allow them to discharge these debts. So running from a problem is never the issue. Run towards the problem. Always walk in the direction of your crisis, never away from it. So I say first you have to educate students, because our system, A, doesn't educate them to be critical thinkers, and B, educate them for some sense, some modicum of understanding that they must join together at some point. But that to do that, you have to understand the generation of selfishness, narcissism, me only. I don't want to get involved. And the very people who will tell you how tough it is to be in debt frequently don't pay attention to the credit cards that they're using are from the very companies that are keeping them in debt. Is this a Stockholm syndrome? So I would not say don't run out of a country to get amnesty. So that's what I'll deal with. We've got to take a lot of other calls. Mickey from Dayton, thank you very much, Mickey, for calling in. I appreciate it. And let's say hello to David from Brunswick, Ohio. Brunswick, Ohio. Hi, David.
Hi. How are you doing, Gary?
Your turn. We're good.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. Yes, David.
Oh, okay. I'm on Magic Jack. I have a question about tea. I love tea. You promote tea, but you don't like caffeine, and black tea has a lot of caffeine, and I wonder what your opinion on that is.
You can buy decaffeinated black tea. You can buy decaffeinated green tea, white tea, oolong tea, red tea. Buy the decaffeinated. Then you don't have a problem. Or look at how much caffeine it contains. 2 milligrams, 5 milligrams, that's not going to do anything wrong. You start getting up around 50 to 100 milligrams, then you've got problems.
So in other words, black tea with low caffeine is good then?
That's all right, yes.
Okay.
Okay.
I want to thank you very much for all you've done and all you said, and I really appreciate it.
Nice to have you out there in Brunswick, Ohio, David.
Okay, nice talking with you.
Ann from New Jersey. Hi, Ann. Your turn.
I wanted to know what you do about bed bugs when you travel.
Well, first of all, don't sleep with them. Are you inviting them to bed with you, Ann? I know you're in New Jersey, and we know you don't know how to drive in New Jersey, and you got the strange governor. Ann, what you do is this. Take food-grade diatomaceous earth. You've never heard this before.
Yes.
All right, and you put the diatomaceous earth, you broadcast it, and leave that, don't touch the bed, for 24 hours. Bed bugs crawling across it lacerate their body, and they dehydrate. It is no different than how I don't have ticks and sand fleas on my lawns, because I walk behind a little spreader with food grade. There's two types of diatomaceous earth. One you can't take in, it's poisonous. The other you can take, it's non-poisonous. And I broadcast the non-poisonous one on the lawns. You have to have it dry. You can't do it with rain for 24 hours. And then you do that once a month. And when you do that, anything that's breeding in there, living in there, it's going to come across that, and it's going to lacerate and dehydrate. So that's what I would do. And then you take your sheets.
But if you go in the hotel, do you have to worry about that?
Well, I always carry a sheet with me. So whenever I'm in a motel, more often than not, I sleep in my car. But I always take a sheet. I will never sleep on any sheet in any hotel in America. All right? All the best to you, Ann.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
James from the Bronx. Hi, James. Your turn.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Good.
Gary, I had a question. Just basically, the question's about libertarianism versus progressivism. Now, I guess a couple years ago, you could have classified me as a classical liberal. Just over the years, listening to your show and so on and so forth, and, of course, other people, I've become more of a libertarian. And in the show, and I mean, I agree with 90% of what you say, but I detect a little bit of a tension between libertarianism in your show and then versus progressivism. And I feel like in the end, when I analyze it, I feel like being a libertarian is the end point. Like even some of the programs you say about, let's say, bringing America back to work, jobs and small business loans, I feel like those would create bureaucracies the same as, let's say, those that exist now. I just was wondering if you could speak to that, and then I guess also people's personal responsibilities in this entire mess and, how that interacts with libertarianism and progressivism. Thank you.
Okay. You first mentioned that you were at one time a liberal. Mind you, we should stop for a moment and think of any term. Our lives are more significant than being a label or a part of an ideology. And that's where I believe a lot of people get stuck. There's the liberal that is the historical liberal, the person that cares about social issues, cares about the community, cares about safety, cares about justice, cares about rights, including civil rights and constitutional rights, and therefore shares many of the same concepts as a classic conservative. And that's why a lot of times people pit one against the other, and they shouldn't. Where the problem has happened is when, with Reagan and everyone after him, you end up with corporate liberals, corporate Democrats, corporate conservatives, corporate Republicans, where there's no logic. I'll give you one example. A corporate conservative or Republican will say we're against, you know, like Mark Levin or Sean Hannity, who's cares less about being a Republican than he does about a conservative. Fine. Okay, then don't be hypocritical. If you say you're against welfare, then why are you for welfare and actually sponsor welfare for the military-industrial complex, which takes more welfare? And why are you for the welfare of the healthcare system? It's the most profitable system in the world for them. Just three industries. The pharmaceutical industry, the hospital industry, insurance industry earn $3 trillion a year in the United States through their systems, the medical system. And yet they have no problem financing wars and the companies that are in those wars for no other reason because they managed to get a seat at the table to get either a non-bid contract or a contract that's an insider's contract, like Halliburton. Why wouldn't you take away all of the subsidies for big oil, coal, nuclear? If we took away nuclear subsidies, there'd be not a single nuclear plant in the United States because Wall Street would never finance it because of the risks of what happens on the downside. But they don't do that. They don't have a problem with the tax allowance on the oil tax allowance. Well, that means that those companies can write off billions in profits as if it were a loss or a carry forward. Also, why aren't they supporting a single tax? A single tax would be the only way that all Americans could finally get a tax break. I don't believe there should be an income tax. I think it's stupid. I believe that you should never be taxed on your work. Instead, you have a sales tax on what you buy. That's reasonable. And you also have you have one flat tax if you're a company and you can make no deductions. If you do that, you could eliminate the IRS. No more IS. No more having to save receipts. No more audits. But that would bring an additional $2 trillion a year into the bank account of the United States government. If you took away all the subsidies for big agra and the banking industry, well, that in turn would mean that you would be saving an additional $1 trillion. So we don't do what's reasonable and right because we are using our ideologies to diffuse basic reason. And on the other side, the liberals, they say they're for the people, and yet they supported the Patriot Act. They support the National Defense Authorization Act. They support a police state. They support fascism because that's what we have. So if you don't challenge the people, in the Nation magazine decided to back Obama, knowing full well this is after he had agreed to some of the most egregious policies in American history. I mean, absolute fascism. So where's the logic? Why not vote for Jill Stein or Rocky Anderson or Gary Johnson? Because they are such corporate ideologues, and they're corporate liberals, corporate Democrats. So they're not going to see the truth because their ideology blinds them. So then when you have the libertarians come around, like Ron Paul, a lot of what he says makes a lot of sense, but a lot of what he says doesn't. So then where is the human value? Where's the spiritual value? Where's the common sense? It is a matter of keeping bureaucracies accountable and keeping them small. You've heard me say that when I look carefully at the actual evidence, that about 50% of all government could be eliminated and make it more efficient. Then you have to have accountability standards, where you have outside accountability where there is no opaqueness, where you can see if something working or not. As it is now, one Department of Defense had 10 different contractors all doing the same identical work. Well, when you show people this, they think, well, that's absurd. Well, it is absurd, but that's what our government has become. And now when they're invading our rights and our privacies, who do they fear? They fear us, we the people. Well, then you have the people who call themselves constitutionalists and Bill of Rights, and they may have some awareness of that. But then they're also, they're not aware of what happens when anyone's rights are taken away. We should be concerned by all rights, and we're not. So you have fragmentation in all these. If you gave a low interest, no interest loan to any qualified small business person determined by the business community within a community, let them make the decision, not some idiot bureaucrat in Washington. Oh, that's redundant. And so for every $1 million of a loan, up to $5 million that you receive to expand your business, start a new business, recapitalize your business, you would have to hire two people at a living wage of $30. Do you realize that if this were really aggressively pursued, we could employ about 10 million people at a living wage? Now, everyone benefits when people are employed in a given community with a living wage, because then you're not ghettoizing the community. Then people actually can have someone stay at home and take care of their children. Right now, most adults have to work, and some have to work two jobs. That brings stress home. Arguments are about money. The number one cause of divorce is arguments over money. And it also fractures the family. Children need parents. Children, in my opinion, need both parents. And you have to have a balance. And we thought we could do it otherwise. A lot of people had children because it was a trophy. It was just another possession. I can't tell you how many people, including people I know, who thought, okay, well, I'm now 45. I'm very successful. I got a lot of money, you know, and now I'll have a kid. What do you mean you're successful and got a lot of money, so you're going to have a kid? You should only have a kid because you really want and cherish a child and will give it its unconditional time, which they never do, but they make sure it's taken care of. I got a nanny. I got, you know, and suddenly they tell you all the things and how much they're doing and how much sacrifice they're making. That kid's going to end up a wreck because the kid didn't care whether or not you bought their love with your gifts or you took them to exclusive schools or you worked so hard to work all your deals to get them into some private school in Manhattan like all these jerks do, as if somehow that education's better. But that's where we're at in our society. We have de-evolved from the humanistic principle to one of objectification of everything. We objectify relationships, objectify our children, we objectify our goals to the point where we lost what it is just to be a human being. So the one part of the non-exceptionalism of libertarianism is it lost the compassion to be reasonable, and as a result has alienated itself in a very contemporaneous way. For example, would you rather see 10 million Americans working, rebuilding a community, revitalizing a community, putting money back into the community because there was a way for them to use the money that we'd otherwise give to the big banks at zero interest to give them at zero interest they have a chance of surviving?
Well, see, the thing is that I think that when you're talking about pure libertarianism, obviously you're not giving corporate welfare. You know, I mean, as far as putting – I would love to see those people back to work. But the thing is that, in my opinion, I mean, I agree with what you said about maybe putting a small, you know, local town, small businesses in charge of what business to get loans. But I feel like certain parts of progressivism create additional bureaucracies. And also
– Give me a specific example, since I'm against – most bureaucracies. Give me an example of where being a true, having progressive ideals. And what is progressivism? Progressivism is finding solutions to our problems that help everyone. Show me where you create a bureaucracy that is untended and unneeded and counterproductive through any of the statements I mentioned.
Well, not necessarily what you mentioned, but for instance, food stamps. I mean, I rarely read the Post, but I happen to see the cover today where people are getting food on food stamps and shipping it to the Dominican Republic to sell it at a profit.
Okay, that was one person who told how it was, and I read the story. What would you do to all the people, including your own mother, if she found herself as I just came back? See, here's the difference between us. I appreciate, James, your comment. Now come with me for 3 months where I interview 3,000 people in Heartland America. I interview senior citizens whose corporations were taken or over where they had worked for 20 and 30 years and their pensions raided. Their product was closed down their manufacturing of products closed down and shipped off to India or China. And now this person is too young to collect Social Security, is too old to be viable in the marketplace, unless it's bagging stuff at Publix a food store, and they have no money. Now, I'm talking with people, including senior citizens, who are not over 65 yet and have no income. I'm filming people last week or 3 weeks ago who only live in one room of a house. Their pensions are gone. They have no way of living, and so they eat cat food.
I think you misinterpret what I'm saying. I'm not saying I lack compassion for these people.
No, you said we shouldn't have food stamps. That somehow they're exploiting the system.
I'm just saying that on a level, when you start out with the best of intentions, you sometimes these things metastasize and turn into something ugly and unintended, and where maybe 50% of the people that are on food stamps don't deserve them.
No, we don't know how many people deserve or not, but I'd rather make the error of having some people exploit a system, but know that a high percentage of the people that I've met, that they are at least able to feed their kids because they have a food stamp that's given to them. I don't mind having a small amount of error to know that the larger good is done. Now, you look in the eyes of 18 million hungry children and tell them that they should wait until somehow society finds its equilibrium to feed them. I can't do that. My heart won't let me look in the eyes of a hungry kid and somehow put my ramrod ideology ahead of that kid's needs. That's not the way I live, James. Okay?
All right, Gary.
I thank you for calling in, though.
Thank you.
Let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, you know, before I came onto the show tonight, I was flipping through the channels, and it just never ceases to amaze me how TV has become a distraction from what's really happening in the world. And, you know, we've had these reality TV shows that have been out there, and, you know, people are eating bugs, and then there's The Bachelor and The Bachelorette and Bridezillas, and just really banal, stupid things, in my opinion, to keep people distracted from what the real issues are. And I came across a channel, and I hope you're sitting down. It's called Naked and Afraid. Who needs civilization or clothes? Each week, two totally nude strangers must survive in an extreme environment for 21
hosted
days.
By Anthony Weiner.
Oh, stop it! No
and
surprise.
Bill Clinton.
Easy.
Michael Jordan.
Okay.
Kobe Bryant.
Go ahead, keep going.
They should all get naked. That's the only way we should actually elect a president of the United States. Because it doesn't give it. Nobody cares about what these clowns do because they're all sociopaths. Egomaniacal. Just let them get naked. Everybody wants to run for president, mayor. The little man syndrome. Now, that's how he buys an election. And, you know, and let's
Weiner
see if they
would win, for sure.
You think so? I don't think so. Look at the picture. I think that this is another one of the little man syndrome with 30 seconds of pleasure and then off to his next conquest. And this is going to be the mayor? Oh, that's great. I got a question for you, Luann.
Yes,
if someone lies to you, but they don't lie to your mother, are they a liar?
Yes.
If someone stole from you and didn't steal from someone else, are they a thief?
Yes.
If someone betrayed you and didn't betray someone else, are they a betrayer?
Yes.
Okay, so the issue is not whether Anthony Weiner, has flashed himself, a gazillion times and said he wouldn't do it and then did it again. That's really between him and his wife or whatever kind of arranged marriage they have, which is obvious to anyone who has a brain. But if you give him a position of power, he's already showed his full complicity to lie and deceive. Do you think he's going to be any less of a liar or deceiver once he has the power? Was Bill Clinton any less? Any of these people in power, any less?
Yeah, you're right.
That's the issue. Nobody should care about his sex life. That's his business. I care about whether or not he could be trusted. And someone who cannot honor the trust in their personal relationships certainly shouldn't be trusted. And that's the issue. But remember, this is one of those guys who showed us a long time ago that he was willing to get right up in your face. He's also the guy who denies the apartheid in the West Bank and Gaza.
Mm.
So if he's willing to deny that, then I wouldn't have any trust for him at all. And it has nothing to do with his, you know, sexual interests. I could care less about that. It has a great deal to do with a person who cannot be honest. And if they can't be honest, I can't trust them. So when politicians start to lie, then you start to see that they're serial liars. Then you start to see they don't care about the consequences of their lies to the people. Then you're dealing with sociopaths. So then the issue is not that they're a sociopath and can't be trusted. It's why the public refuses to see them for what they are. And that means the public can't be trusted. The issue ultimately is the person who needs to watch naked reality show. It means they don't have a life, and that's their opium. And if that's as good as it gets for a person to escape the complexities and of their life and the vagaries of life by some moronic reality show, don't blame the reality show. Challenge the people who find a need for it. Thanks a lot for your call.
Okay.
I'm Gary Nall. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen in.